Here, we, for example, generate between 12.5 and 15,000 leads every single month.
They say it's always hard to reach the first $1 million, but after reaching that first $1 million, then it becomes a little bit easier to get that $1 million eventually.
I always look at it as push and pull factors. And I think Dubai at the moment is in a real sweet spot where it's benefiting from both substantially.
Well, I've been hearing recently about certain websites and certain apps where brokers can join them and get 100% commission, but I'm not sure if this is entirely true. Why do you think there are some talented brokers that never become financially successful?
You'll fail a lot more than you succeed. That is the harsh reality of real estate. What's also great about real estate is that you can fail so many more times than you succeed, but still be really, really successful.
All right, we're here with another special episode with a great friend of mine, Louis Harding. First time meeting him. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So for the audience that are listening right now, who is exactly Louis Harding?
Oh, deep question to get started. So I guess in the grand scheme of things, I'm still relatively new to Dubai. So I've been here in Dubai for just under 2 years. I'm the CEO of Better Homes. Better Homes is the oldest and longest established real estate brokerage firm in the city. It's nearly 40 years old next year. And previous to that, I worked in London real estate for just over 20 years. Personally, I'm a pretty normal guy, married, couple of kids, you know, that sort of thing.
Wonderful. So you will not, I still will not consider you the average person alive for sure. But let's say, going back into your life, what's that one decision that you made early in life that shaped who you are today?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think quite an important tipping point for me was the realization in life that it doesn't owe you anything, and that if you want to achieve things, you've got to go out there and create it yourself. Although it doesn't sound like it, I came from a very working class background in England. I'm one of five boys. I'm the youngest of five boys, and we grew up in a single parent family, in housing which is known in the UK as council housing, local authority housing. So, you know, very working class. We were pretty poor growing up. And I think once I realized that if I wanted to achieve something, no one's going to give it to me, I have to go out there and take it, I think that changed my mindset on life in general, really, and the ability to actually go out there and create something for yourself.
Was there like any specific challenge that taught you the most about real success?
I think the challenge was really growing up and almost realizing what I knew I didn't want. And for me, the drive to be successful is not necessarily attaining things or chasing success or chasing wealth or whatever it might be that represents success today. For me, actually, it's probably running away from what it is I don't want, and running away from poverty and running towards being able to create a better future for myself, but also for my family and for my kids, which probably isn't a very straightforward answer. But when I often think about what drives me, it's more about what I don't want as opposed to what I do want, if that makes sense.
Now, we know that you're the CEO of Better Homes, which is a brokerage firm.
Mm-hmm.
Correct me if I'm wrong, brokerage firm that focuses on real estate.
Yeah.
Now, if you weren't in real estate, what surprising career would you have chosen?
If I was good enough, I would have loved to have been a footballer. I think like probably every kid in England growing up.
Yeah, you like that. Anyway, everyone in the UK wants just to be a footballer. Like they're waiting in the garage, waiting outside playing football, and they're waiting for the scout to just to shoot
correct
to play for the league.
Yeah, but I mean, unfortunately, I wasn't good enough. So I think the other option actually that I was very close to was the military.
Interesting.
Yeah,
you think that shaped you in a way that you, because you want to be in the military, it shaped you to becoming a CEO for today?
I think potentially. I've always I've always been very disciplined and I've always been very driven. And I think I've always had a pretty good realistic understanding of life not always being great, and that actually a bit of resilience and a bit of grit goes a really long way to being successful over a long period of time. I'm now at an age where people that I've known in the industry for 20, 25 years who are really, really successful, they weren't necessarily the most talented 20, 25 years ago in any given situation. But they've got to where they are by being really disciplined, really resilient, and really gritty. And that ability just to show up time and time again and do what is required to be successful.
Consistently.
Totally. Yeah.
So let's talk about Dubai a little bit.
Yeah.
Why do you believe people just as successful as you are moving to Dubai today?
Yeah. I always look at it as push and pull factors. Mm-hmm. And I think Dubai at the moment is in a real sweet spot where it's benefiting from both substantially. I think Dubai has done an amazing job of creating really attractive pull factors and things that are well documented and things that we know, whether it's the ease of doing business, whether it's the lifestyle, the safety, how tax efficient it is. But I also think it's benefiting from a lot of disengaged people from the country that they're in. And I think certainly a lot of people that I know who have made the move or are thinking about making the move, they're really attracted by the lifestyle and everything and the opportunities that can be created here. But they're also just a bit disenfranchised with where they are. And often when people ask me, how's it going? Do you enjoy being there? Why is it so great? The response that I often give is quite intangible. It's more about the attitude of the people that you meet here. Mm. And almost everyone that you meet, and it sounds a bit cheesy, but they just have that can-do attitude. They have that positive outlook and that can-do optimistic outlook of let's make some good things happen. And that for me actually has been the real big benefit of living here with all the other tangible stuff as well, which make it a great place to live and work. But it is definitely the attitude of people that you come across.
Interesting. But let's say for someone who's coming here, of course, the first thing they will need is a place to live.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it's that to rent or buy.
Yeah.
I always have that question and I want to hear from the perspective of a CEO of a brokerage. What's that one mistake first-time buyers make when they come to Dubai?
Yeah, I think there's probably a couple of things, actually. I think they often forget about the relationship that they have with a real estate broker.
Hmm.
And the fact that they are paying a fee to the real estate broker. So I think actually they should probably be a little bit more particular about who they decide to use and almost qualify and vet the individual as opposed to just focusing on, do they have the property that I might end up buying? Because if you're a first-time buyer, particularly also if you're new to the region or new to Dubai, part of what you're paying, yes, of course, you're paying for the transactional element of finding a property. But in theory, you should also be paying for advice and service and being able to give a good 360 view about what's going on within the real estate market. So I think first-time buyers should be, as I say, more picky about who they engage with to make what in most cases is the biggest financial decision of their life.
Interesting. So if someone had their, if you were now looking to invest your own money right now in Dubai, where exactly would you put it?
So I think if I was investing, I would look for a blend of high yields and obviously hopefully capital appreciation. But I would also try and find an area that is also relatively mature. And that sounds like a bit of a contradiction, trying to find all of those three things. And when I think about the areas in Dubai, I think JVC is a very good option. I think JVC offers really good value for money. The average price per square foot is lower than the average across Dubai. It's still pretty well located centrally. They're doing big improvements around the road network. It's a really nice blend of end user and investor demographic. There's also a really nice blend of developers in there from affordable to more premium. And if I was investing, I don't know, say 500,000 dirhams or something like that, I think I'd probably be inclined to put down a 25, 30% deposit on a one bed. You can still get yields of sort of 7 to 9%. That would still leave you enough money for furnishing the flat. It would still leave you enough money for the fees required. But I would also then put money aside to have the property professionally managed as well, because the data is very clear that tenants will pay more for a property that's professionally managed by a real estate brokerage. And also they're more inclined to pay more money as well. So I think that would probably be where I'd be looking at the moment.
So right now you're looking at JVC being that place.
Yeah.
But do you believe there's another underrated neighborhood that potentially 3 to 5 years down the line, it could be one of the best places to invest?
Yeah, I think Moat City is a bit underappreciated.
Really?
And a bit undervalued. Yeah, there's a lot of work going on there now. Union Properties are doing a huge scheme around the track, which is going to change the look and the feel of it dramatically. There's a lot of really great communities that are popping up around that area as well, where Moat City will naturally be almost the sort of hub, the high street that people will go to for whether it's Waitrose or the restaurants or whatever it may be. And again, it's still relatively centrally located when you see all of the building that's going out into the desert. So I think Moat City is an area where in 3 to 5 years, people might look back and go, oh, do you remember what good value it was?
So for me, for example, let's say if I'm a person who just recently came to Dubai and I'm trying to get a good property or deal, how do I do that in the fastest way possible?
Yeah, I think the short answer is data. And we are really blessed here in Dubai, actually, with the amount of transparency that we have in the real estate market. When I think about the UK, it's really difficult to get really good information. Now, part of that is the fact that the market there is centuries and centuries and centuries old. So you get lots of unique properties. So you can't necessarily compare apples with apples. The main thing about markets like the UK is that the data is just so slow to come out. You get what's called the land registry data and it can take 3 or 4 months. Whereas here you get instantaneous data, which enables you to make an informed decision around yields, price per square foot, what the correct area is, the transport routes, et cetera, et cetera.
The rental prices, the purchase prices, exactly. Everything is just laid out.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it almost removes a lot of the subjectivity. In other markets, it's almost, no, my opinion versus your opinion about whether it's good value or not.
Or that one is based on the facts, the reality of the market.
Correct. It's, there you go, here are the facts. And I think AI will probably have a big impact on that as well over the next period of time. I think people will simply put into AI what their strategy is, what it is they're looking to achieve. And AI will just deliver what it is that's out there for them.
That is interesting that you mentioned that. Do you think that AI would eventually replace brokers?
I think it will up to a certain point. So one of my big observations here in Dubai real estate is because it's so busy, there is so much demand that there is also so much wastage. So in London, my biggest challenge running a real estate business was creating leads for my brokers, my real estate professionals. And the numbers were sparse. Here, we, for example, generate between 12,500 and 15,000 leads every single month.
What?
So the waste is just huge. And actually, I think where AI will come in will be retargeting and reheating those leads that haven't been dealt with. Agentic AI will give us the ability to actually have conversations with buyers, tenants, landlords, sellers, which will then mean, I think, that the client will then be passed to the physical real estate agent when they're further down the line of the journey. So when they're at a point where they're qualified, we know their financial situation, we know what it is they're looking for, when they can proceed, and they're actually ready to then physically go out and see properties.
It's like you already have the data about this qualified lead before you even start helping them out.
Yeah, correct. So I don't think it'll replace it, because there is still the need for the physical aspect of it and the relationship building and everything else that goes with it. But I think it will massively improve efficiencies up to that point.
You know, I've been hearing recently about certain websites and certain apps where brokers can join them and get 100% commission, but I'm not sure if this is entirely true.
I've seen that same advert on Instagram actually.
Yes.
And I don't know anything about it, and I certainly don't want to be negative, but often in life, if something's too good to be true,
it's like 100% commission, and that you go through that way. So what happens if this becomes a norm? Does that mean the brokerage firms will no longer be valuable for people to? That's what I'm trying to understand, like, if this is something that's truly happening here or not.
No, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I think there's still a huge amount of work that the businesses do behind the scenes. You know, when I look at our cost base in terms of what's required to create those leads and generate the opportunities, it's really substantial. And I think the brokers here, they do actually have a really nice blend of being able to take a really substantial percentage of every transaction commission without really any of the downside or the risk, because they have a business that gives them all of that technical support and everything behind them. And the UK is seeing a bit of a sea change at the moment where the brokerage model is really beginning to gain momentum. And that's because working in the traditional way of a state agency in the UK, the commission to the brokers is tiny in comparison to what they can get here. Mm. So I do think the brokerage model is a really nice blend for a good broker, where it's most of the rewards without much of the downside.
We'll definitely talk more about real estate brokers for sure. Going back to now, we mentioned about having data, and this data helps us qualify whether this is a property good deal or not. But we also have to take into factor, what is that one simple negotiation tactic?
Yeah.
Because in every deal, there's a negotiation happening. But maybe from your perspective, what is that one simple negotiation tactic that we can use or that we should master?
Yeah. I think for me, it's lose the ego. And there's a really good book by Ryan Holiday called Ego is the Enemy. And he talks about it. And I definitely think that is the case when it comes to negotiating. I think when I think about my journey when I was younger, I felt the need of having to win every situation.
Mm.
I then grew up and I had kids, and you know, suddenly you put life into perspective and you sort of realize what's important. And I think what's really important in any negotiation is both sides feeling like they got something from it. And I think the really good negotiators are the people that actually can create the outcome that they're trying to create with the other party thinking it was their idea, or at least the other party thinking it was a joint decision. In my experience, if someone feels that they have been almost forced or pressured or convinced into a decision, then often the stability that deal is built on is pretty weak. So, you know, something I say a lot to my guys at work, particularly the younger ones and more probably the males than the females, is lose the ego. You know, don't worry about the perception of whether you think you won that situation or not, as long as you create what it is you're looking to create.
How do people lose money in real estate, even when the market is even strong?
Yeah, I think people do still lose money in real estate when the market's strong. And I think sometimes they can often get carried away. They can sort of get carried away with the momentum and the urgency that a good real estate market creates. But the other thing that a good market creates as well is that it can sometimes overinflate more periphery areas. So areas that aren't mature, areas that perhaps are new, or in other markets around the world have traditionally not been the place to invest. So that perhaps when the market does run out of steam a little bit, they can sort of find that they perhaps lose a bit of money that way. Mm. I made exactly that mistake in 2007 in London. So 2007, just before the global financial crisis, I wanted to buy in a relatively rock solid area in South London, an area called Clapham. but because the market was hot, I found that I was pushed further and further out. And 3 months later, we saw the first sign of the global financial crisis. And I was definitely disproportionately impacted because I didn't stick to some of the basics of trying to invest in my in the market.
I see. So for those, like, what would you say from all this journey that you went through, what would be the smartest property investment advice you've ever received throughout your 20 years of journey so far? 20 years? Was it?
Nearly 23, actually.
23 years of journey. So what was that?
Makes me
one big investment advice that you feel like definitely everyone should take it.
Yeah, I think it's a cliche, but most cliches are there for a reason. And something I was told very, very early is never buy the best house on a bad road or the best house on a worse road. Always buy the worst house on the best possible road.
Interesting.
Which ultimately is location, 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 right? And regardless of what happens in the market, regardless of the different market cycles, if you buy in the best possible location that your money can get you, then over a long period of time, it's probably going to serve you quite well.
Really?
Yeah.
So would you say, for example, let's talk about Dubai here.
Yeah.
Would it be better to buy in downtown Dubai if I can afford it compared to buying it in JBC?
Yeah. So I think when you look at Dubai now, you can see actually that areas like downtown, like the Palm, they're actually now becoming quite mature, mm-hmm. where there isn't a huge amount more buildings happening. Mm-hmm. There's not a huge amount more growth. So there's, as a result, only going to be finite supply in what is an amazing location. So over a sensible period of time, then it's probably going to be a pretty safe investment.
Mm.
And it's exactly reflective in other mature markets, whether it's New York, whether it's London. You know, simply no more buildings are being built in Mayfair or Knightsbridge or Chelsea. And there are parts of Dubai that are definitely still getting that way now. But also with those areas comes a bigger price tag. So it's not always possible for everyone.
I feel like Dubai is expanding in a way that it's going all the way to Jebel Ali.
Yeah.
So going to Palm Jebel Ali, and it's just expanding all the way to the borders near Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
And then it's expanding also from Dubai South and Maktoum area.
Yeah.
And also expanding all the way to Dubai land and beyond Dubai land.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So everything that is in the middle right now within Dubai, that's already been mature and is just expanding to the left.
Correct.
The bottom down.
Yeah, correct.
That's what's happening right now.
Yeah.
So for the people that are coming here, they should definitely take the opportunity and invest right now.
Absolutely.
Before it even gets more pricey.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure. Now, let's talk a little bit about the leadership.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure being a chief executive officer in itself, it has a lot of demanding responsibilities.
Yes. Yeah.
What is the single fastest way to turn someone who's an average broker in your own company into a star?
For me, it's getting to the root of why they're not as successful as they possibly can be. And I see my role as leading the business as a job of removing as many of the excuses as possible that they might have to be as successful as possible. But then when it comes to the individual broker, it's about really understanding their business, because everyone's different. You'll have different strengths and weaknesses. To me, I'll have different strengths and weaknesses. And sometimes when it comes with a broker, it can be the smallest little cog in the entire process that is required to be successful. That's where we have a real focus on data and understanding the entire process of a broker from cradle to grave. And the brokers think that I'm some grumpy old man asking them to ensure that they interact with the CRM correctly. But actually, I want that information largely so that I understand them better, because no one wants to work for a leader that just turns around and says, do better or do more deals or work harder. That's adding no value at all. But if you can sit with a broker and say, you're really good here, But I think if you improve on here and here and here, then you're going to see the kind of return that you want.
Yes.
Because also once you get to that point, for a lot of brokers, it then just comes down to confidence and momentum. But it's identifying those areas first.
So for someone like who's starting out and they continue this path, 3 to 6 months down the line and still they haven't got a single deal.
Yeah.
What is your step to fixing that for them?
It's time with them and understanding their business and what they're doing and what they're not doing. And sometimes it might just not be the right career for them.
Real.
Because it's not for everyone. It's a hugely competitive industry and probably more competitive here at the moment than anywhere else in the world.
More than 26,000 brokers, for example.
Correct. Yeah, correct. And part of being really good at real estate is being comfortable challenging clients about the realities of their search or the realities of their sale and challenging them on what they think versus what the reality might be. And some people just don't like that. And it doesn't necessarily have to be conflict. It doesn't have to be really combative. And you can do it in a really polite, charming, professional way. But lots of people that have worked for me over the years who have been really high caliber, really well educated, really polished, really professional, but any kind of conflict or disagreement, they just can't do it. So that can often be part of it as well. It's not for everyone.
I see. So would you say that if 6 months down the line, I have not got a single deal, does that mean I have to change my career?
I think if I would sit with someone after 6 months and I knew that we had invested absolutely everything that we could into them with training and development and we'd given them the time, but also I was really confident that they had gone away and actually had the attitude and the aptitude to put the things in place that we had asked them to do. Yes, sometimes it is a case of this just isn't the right career for you.
Mm. So for those who are top performing brokers, what is that one common habit that you've seen as a CEO that anyone can adopt?
Really simply, it's consistency.
And what?
In the process and the discipline of doing that process every single day. You know, I'm a big believer that success over a long period of time is very, very rarely a result of talent or the best education or the best upbringing or whatever it may be. It's often about that ability to do the grind, the boring stuff.
So what is this boring stuff that you're doing that is better than the average?
Yeah, so when it comes to real estate, it's about, for me, it's focusing on the process rather than the goal. I think goal setting leads to inconsistency, and goal setting doesn't necessarily give you that muscle memory required to be really successful over a long period of time. So in real estate, in most markets, but particularly here in Dubai, if you're brand new, in the region, you don't know anyone, you're just relying on enthusiasm, professionalism, and hard work. Over time, you'll build up a skill set and you'll build up a black book and you'll build up contacts, but that takes a really long time. So until you get to that point, it's about coming in and touching and reaching out to as many people as you possibly can. And
cold outreach? Cold outreach?
Yeah. It's cold. It's lukewarm. It's warm outreach. They're very fortunate if they work for a business like ours that we're going to create a lot of inbound leads for them. But it's about that discipline to have really good time management and time structure to initially build up your client base, build up your listings, and then over time, manage them correctly to give you the best chance of actually creating some sales or leasing, whatever industry you might be in.
I do think that from my perspective, that those who are performing really well, the top-notch brokers, they have built a client base that has truly build a trust with them. So
correct.
They have built a trustworthy bond with their clients that have previously purchased something of a property, the small, now purchased their next house, their future house, their investment. Everything comes from that previous client and how they dealt with them.
Correct. And so much of our industry is also referral based.
Mm.
And you know you're doing well in your job when a client will ask your opinion, and you'll also know you're doing well in your job when you'll get random messages from someone saying so-and-so recommended you.
That's looking even better.
By, can you help us? But it does take a long time to get to that stage. And when you first start in real estate, it's all about outbound. It's all about the opportunities that you create. And over time, you get a slightly better balance. And there are some real estate brokers in town where it's just inbound, where they can have a brilliant living and be really successful off the back of referrals and inbound and people knowing them. But most people have to work on a bit of a balance between the two.
Sure. When someone truly struggles, you mentioned you try to help them by setting up a system, helping them. But let's talk about, like, what is something that a leader does wrong when managing people?
When I think about my early leadership, and I got into leadership very young. I was running a very large sales team at the age of 25, and one of the early mistakes I made, I think, looking back, was thinking that everyone else thought like me. Thinking that everyone wanted to be the best, everyone wanted to win at everything, regardless of what it was.
And that's not the case.
And that's not the case. And what that leads to is real frustration, which can then manifest in the way that you manage them. No one wants to work for someone that feels they don't like them or feels that they're disappointed in them. So part of good leadership is really understanding your people's why they're there, what drives them. And I think a lot of people make the mistake, particularly in our industry, where they just assume that they're in it to make money. That's all that they care about. And for a lot of people, that is the case. But for lots of other people, that's not the case at all. I've had lots of people work for me over the years where the financial side of it was almost secondary, because they were very independently family wealthy. And actually, it was about proving it to themselves or proving it to their dad or proving it to their family. Or they just wanted to be the best that they could. So for me, it's don't make the mistake of thinking that everyone thinks like you, because if they did, they'd all be in your job.
True.
But also really understanding their why, basically, what it is that gets them out of bed in the morning.
What's the harsh truth about real estate do people usually refuse to accept?
Oh, you'll fail a lot more than you succeed. That is the harsh reality of real estate. But what's also great about real estate is that you can fail so many more times than you succeed, but still be really, really successful.
Is there a certain cliche you would say you completely disagree with?
I don't like fake it till you make it. I don't like that. I definitely believe in the idea of act as if. Act as if you are that mature person. Act as if you do have a great track record. But I don't believe in fake it till you make it. I believe in putting your hand up and saying, I don't understand. You know, please give me more information on that. You know, I think if you adopt that fake it till you make it, I think you run the risk then of actually not being curious and asking questions in situations that could help you improve. I also think people have a pretty good radar for people that aren't authentic. And if they are faking it, I think people can pick up on that quite quickly.
So let's say if I had a client and I'm a broker and this client asked me something very specific about the property, but I don't know the answer to it.
Yeah.
Should I fake it and tell him like,
no.
Yeah, just try to go through it? Or should I say, I don't know the answer yet, but I'll get back to you.
Exactly that. Yeah. Exactly that. Because they'll respect you for it. In future, when they do ask you questions that you answer, they'll have more credibility in what you're giving, because they'll remember that situation where you didn't know the answer. And I think if you go down the route of trying to fake it, I think most people, they pick up on that.
It will backbite you, for sure.
100%.
You might say something wrong and the client actually knows the true answer.
100%.
He's like,
100%.
He's like, no, I know it's this one, because I was just testing you out.
And that's it, right? Your relationship is gone.
Yeah.
It's absolutely gone. They probably won't want to engage with you again. And if they do, they're not going to listen to any advice that you give them.
For sure. Because you try to fake it totally.
Yeah.
So why do you think there are some talented brokers that never become financially successful?
I think talent doesn't necessarily result in success. And I think you could probably apply that to most areas of life, whether it's business, whether it's sport. You know, I've talked a lot about that discipline and grit and hunger and determination just to go. And that, as I say, that's not necessarily reflected in talent. And also, just because people are talented, it doesn't mean that they're always going to make good financial decisions, frankly. Mm. And I've made a few property decisions over the years. Some of them were not great. And I was working in the industry. Buying just before the financial crisis is a really good example. I bought right at the top of the market. And within about 3 months, it was worth less than what I paid for it.
Did you sell it?
I've still got it now.
Oh, so okay. How much has it been worth this?
It has now.
Okay.
It has now. I stuck it out. Yeah, I stuck it out. Yeah.
All right. Wonderful. So you stuck to the grind of waiting until it just reaches back to what it was.
Yeah.
Right? Now, let's go with this question that I have for you. If you were to lose your title, capital, and connections, you lost it all. What's your immediate next move to get back to where you are?
I would like to think that I would dwell on it for a relatively short time. And for me, that would be the biggest component in anyone in that situation, whether they can bounce back and rebuild. I think it's about your mentality when you're in a situation like that. Because I think whether you think you can or whether you think you can't, either way, you're right, because it starts up here in the head. And I've never, ever been precious about titles or any of those things. Honestly, I've never really cared about that. So losing my title and my position, that honestly, I think I could get over that quite quickly. The capital side of it, that would be harder to digest because, I don't come from money. I'm not rich. Any capital assets that I have is actually largely in property, and it's something I built up over a long period of time. But I would go again, because I'd have to go again, because I have a wife, I have two kids, I have responsibilities. I simply wouldn't have the luxury of being able to dwell on it for too long. And not to sound too cheesy, but this is a city where you can go again and be successful again very, very quickly. In a way that most other cities in the world, particularly at the moment, I don't think afford you that privilege. So I'd dust myself down and I would get back into real estate because that's all I know. And I would get out there and probably be a broker and build myself up again.
I think you would do much faster than what you've done, because in that 20 years or 23 years of experience, I'm sure you have a lot of knowledge that you can just implement it just like that.
Correct. Yeah. Hopefully wouldn't make the same.
Compared to someone who's a fresh start.
Correct. Yeah.
It's always, they say, like, I don't know if you think if this is true or not, but they say that it's always hard to reach the first $1 million, but after reaching that first $1 million, then it becomes a little bit easier to get that $1 million eventually. Now, if there's something that one single action that listeners that are listening today can take from this podcast that could generally change their life, what would that be from your perspective?
I think a really good way just to look at life generally is take ownership, and take ownership of every aspect of your life. It doesn't just have to be business, whether it's your relationships, whether it's your health, whether it's your fitness, or whether it's how you operate in the business world. And I really like stoicism. I read a lot about stoicism. and Epictetus, and basically the whole idea of focus on what you can control and forget about everything else. And another good Stoic quote is, we suffer more in our imagination. And the reality is that bar something that is a real outlier, most of your destiny in life is actually in your own control. And you just got to go out there and take ownership for those things that you can impact.
Well, that was a sound advice. And Louis Harding, thank you so much for being here.
Pleasure. Thanks
for sharing this information. Where could people reach out to you?
They can find me on Instagram. Obviously, I'm on LinkedIn as well.
What is the username?
It is, it's at Louis D.A. Harding.
Louis, how do you spell that?
L-O-U-I-S D-A Delta Alpha Harding, H-A-R-D-I-N-G.
Wonderful. Thank you for being here.
Thanks.